My name is Christina, and thank you for checking into the Home for Wayward OCs. This is a podcast where a guest and I talk about our original characters, the good, the bad, and the self-inserts. And today, our guest is Daniel. Or is it Dan? I forgot to ask before we actually started recording.
Daniel's good. Yep, I like that. Okay. I like the full word, so.
Okay, this is Daniel. How are you doing today?
I am doing well. A little rainy outside, but other than that, in this year of 2020, it's good for this year, so.
Yeah. I very definitely feel that. When I woke up this morning, it was incredibly foggy, like from, let's just call it like 6:30 until probably about 9:30 in the morning. It was really unearthly to be like out on my morning walk at work from my break and just, you know, I can't see anything in front of me except for the walking track, so that's fine.
Autumn is coming, right? End of summer.
Honestly, given the state of the climate, I am looking forward to every single day between 70 and 50 degrees that we get in the US Fahrenheit.
We'll take it as well. Yep.
Yeah, really. But we're not here today to talk about global warming. Because that would
be... Or maybe we are. Who knows?
I don't know. Are we?
No, not today.
Okay.
We've got some other interesting topics. Maybe we'll get into the quantum realm here, but not global warming, so not yet.
Okay. So with that in mind, then, who are we talking about today, Daniel?
So we're talking about Cassandra or Cassie Cole. So one of the characters in my main novel / audio drama that I've got running right now. And yeah. So, Cassie Cole.
Okay. Now, right off the bat, out of curiosity, you said that it is both a graphic novel and an audio drama. So, which came first?
I've written it, so not graphic novel. Full novel.
Sorry.
I started in podcasting was in, initially as actual play, and so we had lots of different characters that were built around those, and then began to shift last year into more of the audio drama side of things. And then I did the little NaNoWriMo, the writing piece that usually comes up in the fall each year, and said, well, if I'm going to write all of this script out to begin with, then I might as well just see if I could novelize it. And that's been different. So in this case, I've written it as a full novel, and it's YA in focus because she's 16 years old. And so the whole thing is very narrative in nature, but it's written first as a novel, and then we go through and add voice actors and narration and sound effects and stuff to it.
Okay. So out of curiosity then, and this will be like the last like source material thing that we have to talk about. Mm-hmm. So then I want to make sure I'm understanding it right, that it was originally an actual play, and then you adapted the actual play into a novel, and now the novel is being done as an audio drama.
So the actual play, I guess the story sprung from that, but it's somewhat tied to that world, but it's not exactly just that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Not a direct point A to point B kind
Correct.
Of adaptation.
Right.
Okay. That's very interesting. So with that in mind, then, would you like to kind of take us through the history of Cassie as a character? Maybe starting with the inspiration in the original actual play?
Sure. So I did the actual play with my family. I've got four kids. Three of those are, well, one just got married recently. So I've got one married.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Which makes me feel really old at this point. But I'm not. I feel young, too, because I'm still doing things like this. So I have two older daughters, three of them total in college, and then so two girls, two boys. And Cassie, she has a sister. So Cassie and Charlie, and the first story series was actually about Charlie. So this is a follow-up that's about Cassie. And they're both kind of an amalgamation of my experience with my two daughters and all the experiences that they've gone through, and other people too. But there's a lot of them in terms of the personality inside of Cassie. So having that time that we played the actual play portion, because they were part of that, and of course all the years that we've spent together, it's pulling that their experiences. So it's my experience of their experience and built into the story. Does that make any sense at all?
Okay. Now, I'm curious, what system was this actual play in?
So I did I'm going to say Monster of the Week. That's not that. It's the Apocalypse, essentially. Setting.
Powered by the Apocalypse.
Yeah, Powered by the Apocalypse, yeah. So we kind of spun our little own but off of that, because I had some different mechanics in the world. But basically the dice rolling and that sort of thing was similar to that set. So two die six.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I definitely agree, because Apocalypse World is maybe not the most developed, but it's got some very good bones to like build upon and use.
Yes, and the players I had never actually played. Like grew up kind of in the old Red Book D&D, and for many years didn't do anything at all. But they had never played any kind of role playing at all. So it's easier to get into because it's more narrative story, and the dice rolling isn't the main part of the whole thing. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, when it comes to introducing people to tabletop games, a lot of the times the best ones are ones that aren't necessarily numbers focused, where you don't have to, okay, everyone, we're having a great character scene, and now we have to stop and do the math.
Right. Yes. You want to avoid the math part of it, yes.
Yeah. Pause the game while I go get my calculator.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, so that system is... it's a great way to get started. I think it's good in general. You, even with people who are pretty well experienced, maybe you don't have quite the total depth, but it's such a flexible system. Really comes down to the players and your desire to have a good time, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. So you mentioned that Cassie and her sibling, mm-hmm. Charlie.
That's correct. Yeah.
Kind of started in this actual play. Then, were you kind of inspired to do NaNoWriMo because of the story that was being told with Cassie and Charlie, or were you trying to come up with ideas for NaNoWriMo and then stumbled upon them?
More because of Cassie and Charlie together. It was that wanting to spin it off into something that was more a cohesive story, mm-hmm. and I was doing it really for the holiday season, was because it's right around that time frame. So I was looking, I have some extra content that we can do. Could I take some of these characters, sort of spin from there? And as I started to write that piece and write out some of the narrative and the dialogue for the audio drama portion of it, I'm like, it's just a lot of writing to begin with. Why not try to frame this? And so the first one is actually framed more like a traditional audio drama in terms of how I wrote the script. The second one is mm-hmm. written more as an actual book. And so there's differences in how they've come out, I think. Plus the first was Charlie was much younger, 11 years old versus 16. And so when you're writing in the novelization portion of it, that's middle grade versus YA. And so the themes have to be very different. And even the chapter lengths are different. The total length is different. So there's a lot that I kind of learned and picked up and figured out, and who knows what from here. But
oh yeah, definitely. So forgive me for this awkward transition, but since Cassie has gone through so many iterations, would you like to talk about her as a character, like kind mm-hmm. of how what was she like when she first was created as a fictional being?
So she's always been about the same age. I think I aged her up for the book to 16. Originally, she was a little bit younger than that. Mm-hmm. And the story worlds that I'm in, the actual play was set in right around Centralia in Pennsylvania and around mm-hmm. that theming concept. But we had this time travel feel. But it's all sort of a magical realism approach. So think Harry okay. Potter, that kind of world. Not entirely like that, but I guess you've got real world settings and then magical things kind of happen in the real world setting. Mm-hmm. We do a little bit of sci-fi that's with all that stuff. But at the end of everything that takes place and these characters that have been developed in that initial story, they kind of wake up into a new reality. I don't necessarily want to spoil that whole scenario, but So she kind of is this amalgam of the characters that that my daughters played throughout that, and then formed her more when I thought, okay, so what I want to do is is have these two as sisters and spin out of this world here. And so I guess the framing of them became a little more clear. They were in the actual play, you had to have more traditional kind of magical capabilities. And so I've stripped those away, kept more of the character traits, and looked at, you know, if I'm going to have somewhat of a magical sense for these two, what would that look like without it being too direct, kind of magical spelly, so to speak? And so what I landed on, at least for Cassie, was that she's an artist, right? And that's where my oldest daughter is an artist. And so I took that portion from her and said, okay, how do I take the concept of art, the concepts that surround art, and play around with this idea that art is magic? And so that her whole story and her whole world kind of build around this idea that art is magic. And if art were magic, okay, what would that look like and feel like in the world? And how would I begin to expand upon that idea?
Okay. So would it be accurate to say then, Daniel, that Cassie's character and maybe like her general journey is kind of like following her passion for art and how it, and like finding out how it can like affect the world and things?
That's what she's, yeah. So it's very much a discovery piece. So she's not, I guess, your traditional beginning, you know, level one kind of character, right? They're not yet fully aware of what they can do, and they're not fully in control of what they can do.
Also, teenagers.
And also teenagers, yes. So, right. It is that very much so. So, yeah. So, and it's a YA kind of experience, young adult, in the sense
that... Yeah, you said that. Yeah.
It's coming, kind of learning about yourself and experiencing all those things that they experience along the way. So, yeah, all that's thrown into it. And that's where we've got. So, yes, artist. That's where we start.
Okay. So, then let's kind of dig into Cassie's like biography as a character. Like, is art something that she's always had a passion for, an interest in? Was it something that was inspired by something that happened when she was little, or something that maybe she did with her sister?
She has always been gifted, skilled in art from the beginning. And in fact, that's what has gotten her into this new Governor's School for the Arts, essentially. So what's the change period for her and the crux for the beginning of the Charlie story is that she gets this full ride scholarship. They grow up in poverty. They grow up with their aunt Joan, sister to their mother, but their mother is gone, presumed to have died. Their father also gone missing. And so they've been living with their aunt in the projects in the eastern flats of this very large urban area center. And that's kind of the beginning of their life and where they're at. And so Cassie is given the golden ticket, basically, out of that circumstance because of her art and because of her skill with her art, and introduced to this new school. It's the Governor's School for the Arts at Walnut Grove, and it's in this high-end part of the city, well, outside of the city, essentially, but not too terribly far away. That's kind of her world, right? It's that modern world, and she's down on luck, but highly skilled. She's found out, and then has this golden ticket begins to change her life.
Okay. So, since this is a piece of fiction, which is not yet fully debuted into the world, and so we're kind of going to be dancing the line around spoilers, I imagine. May I ask if the golden ticket thing, was it something that like she applied for, or was it more along the lines of like the magical realism? Hey, you just got an invitation for a scholarship out of nowhere. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah. I mean, she was found out through her school. We don't really touch on exactly how that is, to your point, a little bit later in the story, but not necessarily, I think, even a requirement. Like she was found out through school, and she was introduced, and she went on these interviews, and she's got these skills. Now, clearly underneath all of that, not necessarily clearly, but underneath all that, there is some sinister things going on that she was found and discovered, that she's got more than just your traditional artistic capabilities and what she's able to do. And that's where sort of the magic around art comes into play.
Okay. So last question before we get into the magical part of Cassie's art and how that affects her life. Mm-hmm. how does Charlie feel about, hey, your sister got this golden ticket out of the circumstances that you live in? Just say bye and accept it, I guess. Or is it more of a supportive relationship?
So that is the whole of the last story, which I called Charlie and the Celestial Star, or Charlie Saves Christmas is the actual audio drama portion of that. And that, to the point, is this is the, you know, she's lost her mother, she's lost her father, and they have each other. They love their aunt, but having each other is everything. Not having each other is just detrimental to her, and she just collapses in on herself. And so the whole that whole experience is the loss of her sister and her dealing with that loss in this other world that she is able to break through, and because of that emotional piece to it. So yeah, that's the heartbeat of that story. And that actually was so that's connected to, again, daughters, so two daughters and their sort of experience. And there we grew up in kind of the DC area, and we had this French immersion school that they both went to, public school, but they basically spoke French throughout that. And so the elder daughter had an opportunity to actually go to France and then to study there for several months, even when she was very young. But the two are very close, still are very close. And I remember observing that when she's gone and she's left now for this 3-month period, the impact that had on the younger daughter. And so I've kind of played that piece into this. They still love each other, but you've kind of lost part of your anchor to the world. So that happens to Charlie. Cassie's a little bit different because she's the one who's gotten the new fun thing to do. And so for her, she doesn't feel that sense of loss.
Okay. So if you want, we can now move into more kind of talking about Cassie stepping out into the wider world of arts schools and also magic.
There you go. Yeah.
Do you have anything in particular where you want to start as a jumping off point? If not, I have an idea that we could follow.
Okay. I mean, the way you want it to. It's the concept. There'll be two concepts that will be important. One is understanding the world of aesthetics and what, you know, the philosophy of art and what that means, because there's key components that kind of drive her character. And then the second is what I actually investigate in the story is a theory of quantum emotion. And so that's the second piece.
Okay. I am going to set my baseline here, which is I have a sense of aesthetics, but it sounds like probably in a less academic sense than you're going to be talking about. And I have never heard of quantum theory in regards to art before. So that's going to be my baseline going in for this. But if I have any questions or things that are not clear to me, believe me, I will ask.
Excellent. Yes. Welcome to Cassie's world. Yeah. So I want to set up to really understand her powers, because I think some people might want to use, maybe they will want to use this in a game kind of scenario setting. I want to dig into two areas. I guess I probably think way more deeply about this stuff than I should, but anyway, there is a framing behind it. And the first is the concept of aesthetics. And that is, when I refer to that, I mean the branch of philosophy that deals with principles of beauty, artistic taste, the theory of art, that sort of thing. And so what I go back to is the idea of aesthetic experience. And there's all kinds of, I think that the big change back in the 1970s is really when a lot of this was visited. Although, I mean, it goes way back, I guess, art, right? Art has always been part of the human experience.
Well, yes, very much so. I mean, for God's sake, back to the cave paintings at Lisieux.
Yes, all of that, right? And it has an impact on us. Impacts on us cognitively and emotionally. And so that this concept of aesthetics and aesthetic experience is really about looking at the attentive aspect, the cognitive aspect, the affective aspect of art in general. And so there's a number of different pieces, but the ones that I really focused on were the ideas of flow, of peak experience, and especially of absorption. So the sense that you can get lost within art as you experience it, your experience can take you from your own reality into this different kind of place, and that really art is meant to impact and to change your awareness, to draw you into it, and to impact you emotionally, and to motivate you, and to get you to kind of change what it is that you're doing. So,
okay, I think I'm following you so far.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. So we have aesthetic experience and this idea of the components of that, which would be fascination. So we look at the attentiveness. How much does art draw you into it? So she is, Cassie's very good at what she does. And so just her capabilities and her skills allow, you know, have people that just are naturally drawn into it. So she's got this basic skill piece of it. And with that, there, you know, the next piece to that is sort of the appraisal of it, cognitive awareness. So I have the setting of the school, because now everybody's in some kind of art study, whether that's in the way that's broken up. We've got writers and digital arts is a new piece to it that's kind of changing things.
Okay,
she's the
good.
Traditional.
Glad to hear that.
She's the traditional visual arts, and they're kind of looked down on because, you know, they're not the cool digital thing. And then you've got the performing arts side of it and all the dancing and singing, that sort of thing, and acting.
Okay. That's very interesting because in my college experience, the digital artists are the ones who were traditionally looked down upon, and the traditional artists were much more elevated. But that was probably also because of the faculty that I was around. Mm-hmm. So it is very interesting. So what else do we need to like set a baseline for before we like talk about how Cassie is using these principles to approach the world and the story in which she's living in?
Yes. So the last piece then is aesthetic emotion and the difference between kind of baseline normal human experience emotion and aesthetic emotion, which is related to art. So it's things like pleasure, pride, surprise, anger, disgust, contempt, shame, guilt, those sorts of things. And I kind of give it a locus in the sense that I'm pulling back to Shakespeare and the Shakespearean humors to make it simpler to understand the four humors, right?
Okay. By four humors, you mean like choleric, phlegmatic.
Yes. Yeah. There you go. Melancholic and sanguine.
Yes.
And so those then connect to phlegmatic is water, autumn, mind, choleric, fire, summer, childhood, melancholic is black, winter, old, sanguine is air, spring, heart, right? So you've got those pieces. So I give a locus of those items, of those four things that you can then build story around, that those sort of Shakespearean humors that are built into this.
Okay. So that's pretty esoteric. And I definitely, as someone who has created many original characters, I definitely understand like needing to build that background for the character. So now that we've kind of like got that established, how does that then translate into Cassie and like her magical art, essentially, for lack of a better phrasing?
Okay, so here's going down the rabbit hole now, all right? Quantum.
Oh God, were we not on a rabbit
hole
already?
No. That's normal stuff there. The rabbit hole is, and so this is the whole actual play was really about quantum reality and morphic resonance. So we're not even going to go into that piece of it, although the quantum piece
is
important, right?
If we did, I'd have to go find myself a spiral notebook so I could take notes.
There you go.
And write down definitions.
So, yes. Anyway, so this place that fascinates a lot of people, I think, today. So one basic piece of quantum theory is that multiple states are superimposed upon each other. And they can exist in multiple locations until they are observed, at which point all of those different superimpositions and locations collapse into the one perceived state and location. Are you following me so far on that?
Okay, I'm gonna be real with you here, Daniel. Uh-huh. I am mostly following along with this, but I am concerned that we are getting too lost in the weeds about the background mechanics that we're going into this, and not enough about Cassie as a person.
Yep, I'm gonna bring you right out of it though.
Okay.
If you stick with me. So the idea of quantum emotion, which is new, is that you can hold different emotions at the same time, right? So an event that might be very sad at a funeral, let's say, can be sad, but can also be happy, depending on what it is that you are, what you are feeling and what you're focusing on in that given time. So where her essential powers come in is that she's able to use art to essentially take all of the different possible states, right? Take one emotional sentiment from whoever it is that's around her, collapse that into one kind of singularity, and then reflect that back onto people. So she can take all of the anger of all everyone's experiences that happen to be in the room, focus that in her art, and then reflect that and sort of power it up onto them to push everybody into a frenzy, let's say.
Okay, so essentially taking the emotional states of the environment and people around her and then being able to cause or create that emotional state in others?
Correct. So it focuses that given state of those around her and then can push that essentially onto others with this idea that the forces that are around her are trying to control everyone, and they want to tap into this essential capability to control and to manipulate people's emotions and feelings to gain power and control and influence over the world. And she happens to have a very special, unique kind of capability to do this sort of thing.
Okay. So am I, obviously, like, we don't have to get into, like, spoilers if any of this would be spoiling, but am I correct in guessing then, or following the thread, that Cassie's story is one of kind of rebellion against the system that is literally trying to emotionally control everyone at this school, and I'm assuming probably the greater world, because that's how so many villains often take it.
So, yeah, in the case, in this case, she's experienced something new and been given this gift that she's got a scholarship and gotten out of the school that she was in. So everything is, she's not aware that all of that stuff is happening, and she's not aware of all of her own power and capability. She becomes more aware of that as things go on. But things then start to spiral a bit out of her control because she's starting to find out that, let's say you could take and control the anger or the anxiety in a given crowd of your classmates. Maybe it's, say, 30 people in a class or so. And you could...
I would choose to do the exact opposite of that thing, because art school is very stressful.
Full of anxiety, right?
Yes. And anger, probably, also.
All of those. So if you were able to reflect that on them, but not just that on them, but potentially expand that to a school, expand that to a city, expand that beyond that, she doesn't know that she's able to do that or how far all of that that capability or that power can necessarily reach. And she's not aware that the faculty are also able to do this and have found her and handpicked her to be part of their machine, so to speak.
Okay.
So she's beginning to learn those things, but she's doing it in the midst of being 16 and being brought into this school for the first time and all the new experiences. And so there's all sorts of ups and downs because she's got all these relationships she's just learning about and feelings and all of that. So all the confusion of being a teenager sort of hides a lot of the things the sense of the powers that art is magic around her.
Okay. Now, I'm gonna take us on a little bit of a different track here, mm-hmm. which is, you mentioned that there's a lot of people that want to take advantage of Cassie's magical artistic capabilities. So I'm gonna pivot that to the other side of the equation, which is, are there people at this school who like her and help her out and have her best interests in mind?
Yes, there's a group of those.
Okay, good. I'm very glad to hear that.
Yeah, one of the things that she finds out quickly is in most schools, right, you've got nicknames that everybody gets. And she's older, so typically you'd come into a school like this, would be a boarding school, probably closer to the age of 12, 13, 14. She's at 16 when she comes in for the first time, but she's still treated as a first year. And so they end up calling all of those kinds of students Judy. Anyway, so that ends up in the getting bullied, basically. So in her first, few days that she's there, immediately she falls into this. But then she finds a new friend whose name is Whittle Apple. So as you can imagine.
Okay.
Pretty.
Whittle Apple sounds like the child of a celebrity who was never told, maybe consider what you are naming this child.
Right. Yes. So she's been through it all, but she's already been at the school for a while. And so they find each other, and that's this relationship starts to spark from there. She also has a sort of a boy. So the hunky guy, or the, I guess the, not the hunky guy necessarily, but the best, the highly skilled guy that she begins to meet. And then this little punk kid that rode in on the bus with her, who's really ultimately he's got this sweet heart, but he just doesn't know how to show it because he's a teenage boy. And so this is this small group that kind of forms around her as they begin to investigate that and her roommate as well. So she's got a roommate, although her roommate kind of splits between, well, there's more of the story that kind of goes into that piece of it, but it's this initial core friend group that begins to discover that all of a sudden there are students missing. And then she has this explosive event where she's unable, she does some artwork with her roommate and it impacts a large portion of the school. And that begins to set things into motion.
Okay. Now you said it impacts the whole school. So I'm really hoping it was a positive emotion that was affecting the whole school and not a negative one.
Well, it was not really positive. So,
oh no,
more mania that takes over in that moment. Now it's the headmistress of the school who is, we'll say I like to play in the world of gray. So you've got, you know, could be good, could be bad, probably is bad. Anyway, she's able to put a stop to that very quickly and then talk with Cassie and begin to introduce this idea that there's more going on there. But
okay. Now, please tell me that there's any adults at the school who have positive intentions for Cassie. I've read and absorbed and been aware of so many narratives in which the teenagers just have been told, like, you are absolutely not allowed to trust adults. And that always makes me really hopeful to see narratives in which they're, you know, like, there is at least one adult who you can trust and who is, you know, not out to maybe do things that are not in your best interests.
Right. Yes. So there are a few of those.
Against the safety of the children at this school.
Yes. Yes. So you do.
Try with the tournament.
Yeah, you definitely do have that. You've got the Bentley, the bus driver. So, but you have a couple of professors that are trying to do the right thing and are finding out. Because as she comes into it, she discovers that students have been starting to disappear from around the school, multiples of them.
And
so that's.
That's not great.
Right. That's what she's kind of thrown into. And so there's this investigation that she and her small group are trying to figure things out. And of course, Whittle Apple, who's been there for a couple of years, has all sorts of interesting theories about what's actually taking place. And so they begin to look deeper into things. And because of Cassie's skill and capability and the fact that she's got these extra powers that she's unaware of, she's elevated by the faculty, which of course a lot of the students don't like that because now she's kind of the golden child.
Now she's the teacher's pet, she is, I imagine, probably the target of even more bullying, which is not great.
Absolutely. But, you know, a lot of experience a lot of people have, I guess. So, yeah. Yeah, so she's got all of those different things going on, but she's not a pushover, and I like to write, my daughters are strong and we raised them to be that way. So they're not, the women characters or female characters are not pushovers by any stretch of the imagination. So she's got that sort of streak that's going for her. And that kind of gets her moving along and starting to build friendships. But also, you know, I guess as what you get within the story is that she's got more impact on others than she thinks that she's got. And all of the emotion across the entire school begins to rise. And so things continue to become normal emotions sort of
are amplified and heightened.
Yes. Yeah, so all of those things begin to amplify as the school year starts to progress.
Okay. And out of curiosity, then, how does that heightened emotionality affect this high school full of presumably preteens and teenagers? I'm going to confess, I'm going to given everything that you've mentioned so far about Cassie's art being able to inspire states of heightened emotion all across the emotional spectrum, I'm going to be very surprised if this school is still standing and not burned to the ground by the end of the school year.
Yeah, we haven't quite gotten that far, at least in what I've released on the story for the total destruction of the school. But certainly you're getting into fights and, you know, angry outbursts and all sorts of other things that are happening in the school for sure. Yeah, all of that.
I hope they stay away from the science lab and the chemistry tools.
Maybe, yeah.
So, without going into spoilers, or in as vague of a sense as you would like to talk about it, what is your favorite character moment that Cassie has had within the narrative? Maybe so far, maybe overall, if you can talk about it in a sense that won't spoil the narrative.
Her relationship with Whittle, I would say, is by okay. It's the favorite part that I've written thus far. And the voice actors just did phenomenal, phenomenal work with that.
Which one is Will?
Whittle.
Is Will
sorry.
The golden boy?
No, Whittle Apple.
Whittle. Yep. Okay, got
Whittle
it.
Whittle Apple. So they have a connection immediately. Whittle is also from her school and from her where she grew up, basically.
Okay.
Now she's older, so she's a couple years a little bit older. But she also
so
arrives.
Since Cassie is 16, mm-hmm. Whittle is 17?
About, yes, 17. Yeah, I think 17, 18, okay. Somewhere around there, between there.
Okay. Yep.
So a little bit older, but obviously more experienced at this particular school. She's percussion. She climbs rocks, those kinds of things. Anyway, so she takes her under the wing, but there's an emotional piece where the two begin to connect, and Cassie begins to realize that she's got feelings for Whittle that are surprising her. But anyway, we begin to take that relationship a little further, and that's the scenes that I have with them. The dialogue is kind of the snappier, fun dialogue, and that connection piece. I think to your point, right? You don't want her just cast into this world with nothing. You want her to be cast into a world where she's got this network. And so as the story progresses, that becomes we build a little bit of a triangle. It's not like a full necessarily triangle because there's lots of relationships throughout there. It's a YA book, so we're going to have lots of different relationships. Yeah. You have experiences. But a lot of what ends up driving her is this relationship that's building with Whittle and her closeness to her and kind of how she reacts when, looking to her and looking at what Whittle's doing in the world around her and those sorts of things. But that's a nice piece. I will say, too, this is a musical, so I've set this as a musical.
Okay.
So we've got musical pieces
Okay.
Yeah.
When you say musical, do you mean musical in the sense of, like, there is music that overlays certain scenes that is relevant to it, or do you mean it is time for us to move from dialogue into singing about our feelings?
Yes. So there are musical numbers throughout, at least, you know,
okay.
A couple per episode. And the whole score I've written along with all of the dialogue so that each piece of music that's underlying it is really meant to be part of the experience, because the goal is to show you that art is magic, right? To build emotion while you're listening to the whole thing. For you to feel as much as you're learning and experiencing with the story. So it's meant to be an experienced piece as much as it is a story and a character in and of itself.
Okay. Having just now learned this is a musical, I feel like you're trying to write I feel like what this really is a socially distanced stage musical that has not yet made it to the stage.
There you go. I guess it has what's required now in 2020, the new way to do musicals, I suppose. No, really, it's...
God, that's going to date this episode.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. No, what I wanted was, it's just a lot of... the first one was more straight audio drama, and because of... I don't know. There's just a lot of creators and the idea that art really is. I mean, when you think about it, dawn of history, all that kind of stuff. But the power of what art can do in terms of, in all of its different facets and features, right? It's not just a written work. It's not just the art that, in terms of painting and drawing that Cassie is capable of, but the music and all of those things are really, kind of the powerful experiences. So I wanted to be able to wrap all of that in together. That's why that sort of the theory behind it is to at least to me, an important piece of why I'm writing the whole thing to begin with. And then why we end up, doing the setting and adding musical notes to it as well, since it's experienced in kind of that audio format.
Okay. I think I get that. Oh, hey, I'm looking at my list of the questions that I like generally pull from if I'm not sure where to go next. And I realized we didn't ever talk about what Cassie looks like.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't. So she does have red hair.
Okay.
Most of the characters I did commission art for a lot of the characters in this one. Usually I don't do that, mm-hmm. just because I like people's imaginations to kind of take it where they will and place it into their own experience. I think that's probably a little bit better. So
I understand that. That's valid.
Yeah. In this case, I mean, she does, because I, commissioned that art piece, and I think I mentioned it once or twice, but for the most part, I don't talk too much of that. She's not particularly tall, I don't think, in terms of how I envision her. My daughters are very tall. They're not red-haired, so it really isn't connected to that piece mm-hmm. at all. But
okay. I definitely understand the whole, we are deliberately not going to describe our characters in a physical sense, aside from maybe like, hey, here's an outfit or something, mm-hmm. because then it allows the listeners or the audience to be able to just, like, this may or may not be the right term for it, but like project themselves into the narrative or allow them to experience it how they want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If any of that made
sense. No, totally. Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. And that's, I get in character creation, a lot goes into the physical creation of it, but in the sense this was written in almost like an idealized, I don't know, there's concepts that I want to get across in her character, and there's certain powers and things that she does. But I think I wanted to keep it relatable enough that, to your point, anyone listening or learning about it could begin to see themselves being this character and potentially doing that, and ideally inspiring people to invest more time into their own artistic experiences and the things that they're doing. And that's part of what I want in this character, is not, and why I ground it in the sense that art is that anyone can do that, and anyone mm-hmm. can. Even though your art may not be as phenomenal as, like, some of the people I've had draw for me, right?
Look, as someone who is extremely familiar with art, the only, heavy air quotes here, bad art is art that is made deliberately to harm others, and plagiarism. That's the only, heavy air quotes here, bad art.
Right.
So, listeners, do not let that keep you from creating things in an artistic manner, because, like, as long as you're not trying to hurt someone, you're fine. Your art is good.
Your art is going to generate a reaction from people, and that's what art does. I mean, that's kind of the whole point of the whole thing, is for you to put your emotion into some kind of medium, format or otherwise, for others to experience that. And so they're going to take something away that's more personal themselves. So sometimes it may be that they don't like what you've got, but they definitely had an experience of, you've gotten them to experience something, which is interesting and which is fundamentally powerful, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely get that. Okay, I have one last, like, fun trivia question about Cassie. Mm-hmm. Who is her favorite artist?
Oh, interesting.
In any sense, because I realize that there's so many different kinds of art. There's performance art, there's poetry, that, like you said, there's visual art, there's digital art. So what's she into?
I think she's more of a classical artist. So I do talk in the story that the new professor that comes in for visual arts is modernist to the extreme, and she is not. So I think she falls more into the Da Vinci type of realm, or more classical types of things, and realism in terms of the art that she's doing. And a couple of other stories, you had some paintings. So I had a sister who we had adopted in the family growing up, and she passed away about 4 or 5 years ago or so. And she was a phenomenal artist, just incredible and very realistic kind of focus. So I guess that piece of all of this from that experience is what has kind of come in here. And the way that mm-hmm. I saw her, because she had a lot of other barriers, mental capabilities and those sorts of things. So she didn't fit into to normal people's experiences, but her art was transcendent. Like, people loved it. I mean, people commissioned all kinds of pieces, and she was all over the mm-hmm. country with what she was able to do. And you just would never expect that if you'd kind of met her. And so that is what I've kind of placed into Cassie's character. So I guess it's another depth layer that's built in there, that's a piece of who Cassie is.
Okay, that does make sense. I definitely can understand, pulling from someone who you especially care about. Like, you've mentioned that Cassie is inspired by, well, your two daughters, and also now having bringing your sister into the equation, it makes it very clear that, like, this is a character who you have invested a lot of time in because you care about the people in real life that this character was based on.
Yeah, very much so. I think a lot, I don't know, you've been interviewing a lot of people about characters and would assume that you find some, right? People put personal stuff, I think, a lot of times we build that into our characters in one way or another.
Yeah, I think this might be the first original character who hasn't been, actually, no. Is there anything about Cassie that, like, you built from, like, yourself and your own personality and your experiences? I've said before on the show that a lot of times there is no character who is not, at least in some fashion, a self-insert character. That every character that people make has at least some influence of themselves, whether or not they realize it. So I'm curious, especially since Cassie has so many strong influences in your daughters and your sister.
I don't know. Can you separate those things? I mean, I certainly have an interest in art. Always have. That's a really good question. I would say that she really is formed around people that I know. Do I have? I'm sure there's something with me and her experience that's in there at some point. But I would say I've tried to minimalize a lot of that. But can you really minimize that? That's a good question. I guess, there's a lot of in my daughters that are me, so that kind of hard to get away from that piece of it. Mm-hmm. But nothing that I, purposefully put
nothing
into
that. Nothing that sticks out right now. Okay. I mean, that's also valid.
She's way better at art than I am. I'm more musically inclined, so.
Well, how about this then? What kind of music does she like? Or is she not a music listener, a music fan?
Yeah, I think, she's not she isn't musical at all, which is interesting. So, a lot of her friends clearly are musical in nature. I don't think she's got a particular thing. Maybe that is a piece of where I'm at, is kind of coming to understand music today. And I find probably, like a lot of people, that Hamilton is a bridge to more hip hop rap than like straight into rap, because that really, to me, has exploded in terms of interest around. So I've started to write a lot more. I've always written poetry. That's one thing. And I write music, but there's bringing the two together are kind of two different things. I think the Hamilton whole screenplay piece has made that more sense to me. So I still can't get away with just straight rap. So I guess for her, that the enjoyment of the lyrical piece, again, that's not necessarily me, though. That's more my kids that have enjoyed that. And so she kind of, I think, flows with more of the modern music today.
Okay. That kind of tracks following that you mentioned that Cassie is much more of a historical artist, I guess you could say. I hesitate to call anything, like, traditional, because it's like everything is a tradition when it comes to art. Right.
It's all been started somewhere or other. Yeah. So yeah, more classical aesthetic beauty, I guess, proportions, those sorts of things. Yeah.
Okay. So we are getting pretty close to the end of the recording. So is there anything that you want to touch about with, or anything you want to talk about with Cassie before we go into the last question?
What have I not covered? Covered what I think I want to cover.
Okay, sweet. In that case then, Daniel, your last question for today is, why do you love Cassie so much?
Well, I mean, immediately, because she's got a lot of my daughters and my love, you know, sister, it's embraced in there. Cassie has, I think, you know, maybe it's that's part of why we build characters that are our own. They allow us to enter and experience the world or settings that we create. And so I think, you know, I've clearly spent a lot of time in creating the kind of setting that so this character allows me to enter into that setting and experience it kind of as I write. So it's a whole new view of the world and a view of experiences that I haven't had, but I can kind of see through her eyes. And so she's not, most of the characters I try to, you know, life really isn't just dark and light, right? It's, there's a lot of gray, a lot of gray in life. It's just, you know, things are different things. So even for her, there's mm-hmm. lots of things that she's experiencing, going through, that I've seen others experience, go through. It gives me a chance almost to speak through her and through her experience of like, here's some options. Here's sometimes a bad choice to make. And here's what happens when that takes place. And here's what happens with a good piece. But there's a thread, sort of this silver thread that I'm able to play through all of that, that mm-hmm. yeah, who she is, her uniqueness of character helps her to spin through the troubles that she's experiencing around her. And ultimately she'll face a choice in the end and we'll see what comes of that. But I think that, you know, that doorway, it's that window or the doorway into some creation that you've had and a way to experience in mm-hmm. that way.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. Not only loving the character for who they are as a character, but also like for the world that they get to be in. Yeah, that's good. Okay, I never have a good seg for this. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Daniel. I appreciated having you on.
Thank you, Christina. Happy to take part of this, and thank you for interviewing people about all the characters that they make. I think that's a really cool idea.
Well, thank you. I'm pretty fond of it myself. In case you couldn't tell by now.
Yes.
So, where would you like to be found on the internet, Daniel? I am sure that you have things that you want to promote and talk about.
So, the main website we're kind of rebuilding, happy-go-lucky, well, podcast, I guess, is where you can find most of the work that we've got. Happy-go-lucky is spelled L-U-K-K-Y, so two Ks in lucky. But happygolucky.com or the Happy Go Lucky podcast. We're releasing the scores all over the place. So iTunes and Spotify and all those places. So that new music will release. And when the artists are singing for me, the benefits go to them. So it's a way for us to kind of give back to a lot of the voice actors that we've got. And that's...
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, well, it's... People put a lot of work and time into their things, so I like them to be thanked and appreciated. So that's, you can always find us on the Cask Junkie Discord. So I'd love to talk with people that listen to the show or want to learn more, or, you know, get deeper into weird things like we've been talking about, because I do like to think deeply about the characters we create or talk about other people's characters and ideas too. So
Good. Yeah. I truthfully am not on the Podcast Junkies Discord as much as I probably could be, just because there's a lot of people on there. But it is definitely possible to find your niche and, you know, then get to talk to people that you like.
Yeah, it's expanded tremendously. So it's been neat to see the growth in that network. I guess it's been Twitter's good. I love to reach people. That's at Lucky Go on Twitter. And Reddit's a weird place. Facebook's a weird place. I found the Discord to be kind of a safe place where you can talk and get to know people. And anyway, that's been my place.
Good. Yeah. Discord is truly I hesitate to say the social media platform that we all need right now, but it's very definitely doing a lot of good things.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I think we met you there. So, hey.
Yeah. The Home for Abbott OCs is a part of the Corner Podcast Network. It can be found on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, since iTunes is on its way out, Google Play, soon to be Google Podcasts, Acast and Stitcher, and hopefully every other podcasting platform that you would like to access it on. If we're not there, let me know and I'll work on getting there. Our theme song is Violet by Ponyton Bear, courtesy of the Free Music Archives. New episodes come out on the 2nd and 4th Mondays of the month. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we can be found on Twitter at WaywardOCPod or through the WaywardOCPod hashtag. And I do have a couple of guests lined up for the coming months, but if you are interested in being on the show, please feel free to send in your original character either by just emailing me or sending me a tweet through the Wayward Twitter account, or you can fill out the Google form, which is currently the pinned tweet on the Wayward Twitter account. And of course, as with all podcasts, it is incredibly helpful if you can rate and subscribe to us on your listening platform of choice. And if you can leave a review, I would very much so appreciate it, because apparently leaving reviews is somehow instrumental to getting your podcast more visibility on listening platforms. I don't know how it works. I'm not a software engineer or a programmer. But if you can do that, I would really appreciate it, because that helps us to find a wider audience and to brighten more people's days. Hey everyone, Christina from the slightly more recent past coming to you with the PSAs that I keep doing at the end of episodes, but I forgot to record for this one. So, number one, please keep washing your hands. It helps. Number two, please keep wearing your mask. It is scientifically proven to help reduce spread of COVID. Especially wear your mask if you are going to be in a place with poor ventilation or with people that you do not live with, and especially wear your mask if you are or if you live with someone who is especially at risk. So, number three, since the school year is starting, if you can, please support teachers in your area and support education systems. I know a lot of school districts at this point are probably doing like back to school supply fundraisers. So if you can contribute to those, I would highly encourage it, especially because God knows we've put teachers through enough. We don't need to make this any more stressful than it's already going to be for them. which leads me then into number four, which is, especially if you live in the United States, but, you know, extending to other countries around the world as well, please, for the love of God, vote in the coming election. This is in November. I am recording this at the beginning of September, and I'm going to be continuing to say this because it's extremely important. Make sure, if you can, that you are registered to vote, that you then are able to request and submit your absentee or mail-in ballot, because it is extremely important. If you are concerned that the postal system might not deliver your ballot in time, I would encourage you to find a way to get it to your local board of elections. I personally am planning on collecting the ballots of my friends that live in my voting area and just delivering them myself by car. If you do not care about who is going to be the president, if you don't have strong feelings towards Donald Trump or Joe Biden, I would highly encourage you to vote for Joe Biden, because we have a higher chance of still having America exist in 4 years if he is president than if Donald Trump is the president again. I'm knocking on wood. And that's probably all going to get sound canceled out. Anyway, In addition, please, 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 please investigate your down ballot votes. So we're talking about things like district attorney. We're talking about races like elections to your state legislature, because those have a higher impact on your day-to-day life than you would think. So if you are concerned or if you don't know a lot about the candidates, I would encourage you to look up vote411. I'm pretty sure it's a .org, but if you type in vote411, you're going to be able to get it, and they will help you find out, like, the positions and the stats and the records of the people who are on your ballot. So please vote, and please be an educated voter. And number five, I've gotten up to five now. God, what a world we live in. Number five is please, if you can, continue to support the marginalized people around you. The civil rights movement that we are currently in has become broader in scale that I don't have a good term to necessarily cover everyone that's being affected by the civil rights movement. So I'm just going to say, be nice to people. Stand up for others if you can, whether in whatever way you're comfortable with. If that is supporting people through donations to a cause, heaven knows there's so many GoFundMes out there. You can always contribute to a community bail fund to help aid protesters as they are jailed by people who are continually trying to curb the rights of protesters, especially in the United States. So just the too long didn't read for all of that PSA is just please be nice to people, go vote, and wear your mask. And that's it. Okay, I'm done now. Back to the episode. What's left of it anyway. Bye. So, thank you all for listening. This has been Home for Wayward OCs, and we hope you enjoyed your stay.
Okay, so do you want me to start with the concept? Yeah, or I don't know.
Go for it. Sorry, I heard a child outside, and I was like, I hope that doesn't come through on the audio, so please continue.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a game that people play that summons Charlie, who's a ghost.
He is very tall. He doesn't have a face.
He might come out in, like, the middle of the night or something.
And then you have to spin around three times with your arms crossed, saying Bloody Mary.
Hi, I'm Elise Parisian. Have you ever wondered who the Mary was from Bloody Mary? If the Charlie game was real or just a trick people played at school? Or if Ouija boards actually worked? On each episode of Unspookable, we look at the histories and mysteries behind your favorite scary stories, myths, and urban legends to get the stories behind the scares. Make sure you subscribe to Unspookable now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And while you're there, give us a 5-star rating to help more people find Unspookable. Part of the Soundsington Audio Network.
Soundsington Media!